Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Coalition Victory. Today's Tuesday, February 25th, 2014. This is episode 4, and we're going to be talking about Born of the Gods Pro Tour, as well as hearing some stories about some of our team members this week. I'm your host, John Walls. I have with me today some of the other members of Team Victory. I'm joined tonight by Toops.
Hey, what's up, everybody?
Jamie is back from his long trip.
Hey, well, I'm back. Nice to see y'all.
Ford is not with us tonight, but in his place, we have two other members of Team Victory. First off, we have Jake Ivey.
Hi, Jake Ivey. I started it back in the Lorwyn block playing Magic. My favorite format is probably Legacy with Walls John, but I also dabble in Modern, Standard, Limited. I'd play Vintage if I have the card. That's like playing Magic.
And also joining us tonight, we have another member of the team, Brock Karul Champine.
How you doing, everybody? I started playing Magic originally back in like 2000, but I played for like a year, then stopped, then started again about 2 years ago when I met all these fine gentlemen that you've already been hearing from. Been playing since then, got probably way too deep into it and paid way too much money for all my foiled out Legacy decks and such. But Legacy is definitely my favorite format with the accessibility of playing Standard. I play that the most.
So yeah, these guys are, you know, some of the members of the team. We've been talking a little bit about some of their decks and stuff. Jake, we told the Chromanicore story in one of the others.
Go Chromanicore.
So first off, one of the things we always do, just for the new guys and kind of for the ones who have been here a little bit, we'd like to just take a couple minutes at the beginning to just talk about what we've done in Magic this week. So we'll start off with Toops. Toops, tell us a little bit about, you know, what you've been doing this week in Magic.
So yeah, I traveled up to a Super IQ in Maryland this weekend. I played Esper. Well, most of the matches went pretty smoothly. I did end up dying to a red-green monsters deck, which led off with a Miscutter Hydra into Gorklan Rampager, Gorklan Rampager, and then blooded me for 22 damage in one turn, which put a pretty quick end to my weekend.
That sounds like just not fun.
Yeah, yes. Magic is fun and interactive.
I think Jake would probably disagree on the not fun to dying with red-green things. Jake, I know you like red-green things. Tell us about what you've done this week in Magic.
Well, this week at Magic, I actually had to work, so I didn't actually get much Magic done this weekend. I wanted to go to the IQ, but I had to work over the weekend. Last Wednesday, I did go to Victory and lost to Maze's End because I have no way to beat that deck in all 75 cards. But I did actually beat creature decks, which is fun, which I usually do, with red-green dudes.
Yeah, I know. Jake's our resident green-red player. Brock, have you been playing the Magic this week?
Oh, yeah, I played in that same IQ. What happened in that IQ is, it's pretty interesting what's gone on with the metagame and what's happened. I've been playing black-white, which has been extremely powerful when the metagame was pretty much all mono-black decks. But what I quickly learned at that IQ was when the game switches to a bunch of red-green dudes, black-white's not very good. Blood Baron and Viscopa does not match up against 5/5s for 4 well at all, especially when those 5/5s are green. The day ended very quickly to Stormbreath Dragons and Polycranoses and 5 Miscutter Hydras. Yeah, 5. But besides that, just been playing on the old cockatrice, which most of us don't even like. But
I mean, I personally like cockatrice because it's free. But
if it's free, it's for me.
This week, I actually got back on Modo. I downloaded the old client, not the beta, because the beta is complete crap. And I looked through my collection. I sold my Snapcaster Mages, my Cavern of Souls, most of my Shocklands, basically everything I had that wasn't Pauper or Affinity. And now I have Modern Affinity complete on Modo. And I'm a lovely 0-3 online playing Affinity. So that has just been a continuation of my awesome luck I've been having. I also attended the IQ with the team. I was on the same deck that Brock was on, the black-white mid-rangey creature decks with, you know, Obsidot and Blood Baron. And I kind of share that sentiment with him that if green-red continues to be this go-to mid-range creature deck in the format, there's not really a place for white-black anymore. I know there was one point Toops was a couple tables down, looked over, and I think my board was 2 or 3 Desecration Demons. It was 3 Desecration Demons and 2 Blood Barons. I was at, like, 8 life.
20-some-odd power.
My opponent had 1 Sylvan Primordial in play, and a whip, as well as having a graveyard full of stuff, including another Sylvan Primordial. And he also had two Caryatids. So if at any point I did try and attack, he could tap down my Desecration Demons. The life gained from the Blood Barons wouldn't matter because he could just chump block them with the Primordials, and then just swing in for lethal. So I actually couldn't attack, and it was probably one of the most frustrating things I've done in Standard. I promptly went 0-2, and then got the hell out of Dodge. And then I came home and played Moto and went 0-3, so I'm not doing too good at Magic lately, but I soldier on.
The problem with the black-white decks and the mono-black decks and why they're not seeing success right now is their removal suite is still suited for each other.
Yeah.
You know, your Bioblight matches up horrendously against those green-red decks, and that is what green-red's completely thriving on right now. And in a perfect world, in a semi-perfect world, we could all just go back to running four Doomblade Dies in the main board, and we wouldn't have an issue anymore. The problem is, though, enough people are still playing black that you then have four dead cards. So, I mean, I'm off of black decks. I'm going back to blue-white control. It's just going to be easier that way.
Yeah. I don't know what I'm going to do if I have to play Standard again. I'm kind of focusing on Modern for the time being. And that leaves one of us left. That leaves us with Jamie.
Hey, I was in Korea, so I couldn't play any. No, wait, I did play Magic. I decided to give it a shot and try playing without being able to speak the language, and it turned out to be pretty fun. I joined a booster draft. My girlfriend helped me out with a little bit of Korean to get me entered in the event, and then I was off on my own. Turns out drafting in another language is actually a blast. You really need to focus on the cards more and what they actually do, because you can't just actually read them. So that was kind of fun. I did make one mistake where I confused the two Tritons, the one that actually heroic draws you card versus the one that's heroic taps things. I thought I was getting the tap thing ones, but I ended up with the draw card ones, and that was pretty bad. Yeah, it turned out I went 1-2 with the deck. It was a blue-white heroic deck without any bestow creatures. Not a good strategy. So I ended up having to do this tempo-y thing with a lot of counterspells. It was a lot of fun to play in another language. There was a lot of pointing, head nodding. But I ended up with a bunch of cool Korean cards, including a foil Daxos, whatever his name is there. So that was kind of cool. And I went on a mad card buying spree. One of the cool things about Korea is actually all the store owners don't care if you buy cards from people, which is kind of unlike the case in America, where most store owners won't let you actually exchange cards for money in their store. But in Korea, like, everyone was just like, here, buy this, here, buy that, and the store owners didn't care. So I got a lot of good deals, including a $52,000 Wasteland.
I saw that one.
You guys can all check out on the Twitter.
Would you get a foil? Was it a foil Korean Wasteland?
No, it's just that Korean won is actually, like, just take the American price and multiply by 1,000. So it had, like, a $52,000 sticker on it, but it was only 52, which seems like a good deal for a
52 bucks. That's good.
Lightly played Wasteland, so I was quite happy.
It's only 52% of Star City value, so I don't know if that's a good deal.
I mean, yeah, you can get Wastelands probably on eBay in the $60-ish range or so. So, you know, 52 is a decent deal. I mean, it's not game-breaking, but I thought it was worth it for a Wasteland.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Legacy cards are awesome.
Can we talk real quick about how addicted we are, the fact that you're out in Korea with your girl and we had to play Magic? That is fantastic.
Hey, I mean, it's a once-in-a-lifetime experience. Magic is truly the international language. If I can play with people who can't speak English, I can play with anybody.
I believe there was one that reminds me of, there was a pre-release Toops and I were playing against, and I was kind of losing my voice. And me and Toops actually just played the whole game without speaking through, like Jamie was saying, just a you know, combination of head nods, pointing, and thumbs up. I was actually probably...
I don't remember why I wasn't speaking, but I think I had a good reason other than just being a jerk.
I think you were just playing along.
Maybe.
Just
that's
to what I see,
point
at least.
That we could. That's entirely possible.
Yeah. It was actually a pretty good game, and it was pretty technically sound, if I remember correctly. You don't have a lot of other stuff kind of clouding your mind when you don't have to talk.
I can tell you what, I felt like I played like much better actually not being able to read the cards, similar to the drafting thing. Like I said, I wanted to be really sure I knew exactly what each card did before I threw it on the table and looked like an idiot when like I couldn't explain to him that I thought it did something that it really doesn't do. So I felt like, yeah, I paid attention to what the cards did, really thought out things. In fact, I often caught them not understanding how the cards worked, even though they could read it. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun. They were all really, really friendly, and I had a really good time and got a lot of cat foils in Korean. So it's a good day all around.
Well, it's good to have you back. So other than that, the only big thing that happened, I guess, was the Pro Tour. The Pro Tour Born of the Gods happened. I'm going to just jump around a little bit. I'm going to go right to our fantasy draft so we can get this out of the way. Toops was the victor.
This is where we play We Are the Champions, right?
Yeah, I'll get on that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'll edit
that. We can license
in.
That. I'm sure it's not cheap.
Oh, I'm sure it's I'm sure it's free.
The thing is, though, only Toops is the champion, right? Not all of us.
Yeah.
Just Toops.
Yeah, but my ego's big enough to be considered a we.
I also didn't get to participate in the draft. That was here.
He does have 4,000 followers or minions or something.
Yeah.
So the final scoring broke down as Toops having 58 points, myself having 41, and Ford came in last with a lovely 34.
Yeah.
Again, if you guys are unfamiliar how this worked, we drafted pros, and depending on how well they did in the Pro Tour, we got a certain number of points. 1 point for each match point they got in the final standings. If they cashed under top 32, they got 3. If they took 32 to 17th, they got an extra 5. 16 through 9 was an extra 6. And if they top 8, they got 9 extra. And I think we said if they win, they got 12. None of us got the winner. I don't think any of us had top 8.
No, there
Toops
was no
close.
Top 8. Yeah, I had both Ben Stark and Sam Pardee who top 16 and top 32 respectively.
Yeah.
Which kind of pushed me over the top.
I think you should have got bonus points. Sam Pardee was playing the winning deck.
No, he wasn't.
He was playing the same list as the pod deck that did top 8. That's what I meant.
Yeah.
So, top 8. That's I'm just going to bring that up real quick. The top 8 is, as Jamie said, there was one Malira pod, Affinity Storm, Tarmogoyf Twin, there was a blue-white-red control, which was your ultimate winner. There was a
called that one.
Blue-red twin, blue-white-red twin, and then Blue Moon, which was this new spicy mono-blue deck splashing red for Blood Moons. That was actually kind of fun to watch it, but that was one of those decks I've lost to on Magic Online, so... Thanks.
Wait, did you just call the deck with Blood Moon where they played about 10 turns of discard go because neither of them could cast spells interesting to watch?
Mm-hmm. It was super interesting to watch.
Ah, I see. You're a masochist then.
For the most part, this Pro Tour was, in that sense, kind of fun to watch for me. I didn't enjoy it too much. I got to watch most of the top 8, and that was enjoyable.
So you got to watch the good Magic.
Yes. And it was. It was pretty good. The top 8 was pretty enjoyable. That was, what, Sunday morning?
Yeah. Actually, I mean, there was good play on camera all weekend long generally. There weren't, it wasn't like Pro Tour Return to Ravnica where some of the special invitees, just there were some really weird odd matches going on. But it was a good weekend of Magic all around. Just wish that the coverage had kind of been up to snuff.
It was what
God.
It was.
That coverage was...
It did
get
much better
it.
Throughout the weekend.
Yes.
I think that Friday was kind of the low point, and then by the time the top 8 rolled around, 3 people in the booth was a bit much, but...
My favorite thing was on Saturday when the commentators were like, LSV didn't do very well, so he can join the booth.
Yeah, I had LSV on my fantasy team. I'm a little sad.
My favorite part was the conversation between Randy Buehler and Rashad Miller, where they spent about 10 minutes talking about how Restoration Angel should blink the birthing pod.
Yes. Oh, I forgot about that.
And it wasn't just that it came up one time. It just kept coming up, and they kept saying it. It was very frustrating to watch.
Other than that, I think the main thing to take away here was Control 1. Once again, it was blue-white-red Control. There were 3 Splinter Twin decks in the top 8. Only 1 Pod and 1 Affinity. I personally thought Affinity was going to be a little bit stronger. Pod being very close second. I did not expect to see three Twin decks. I mean, Twin is good, but we've seen three very different Twin decks up in the top eight. But I mean, Control is blue, white, red. Control is coming back now that Deathrite is gone. The one thing I really wanted to note was no Zoo in the top eight, which everybody was kind of freaking out a little bit about with Wild Nakato being unbanned.
For the most part, the decks in the top eight prey on Zoo. It makes sense that you know, tier one players would be on Zoo and then would get beaten, therefore letting these decks right into the top eight.
The other interesting thing I saw was that there were no Jund decks in the top eight, and you know, no fairies. I think Toops kind of hit the nail on the head with that when we talked about it before, but you know, saying fairies didn't do too well against some of the more aggressive decks. So I kind of understand that being out there. I like seeing Jund not there.
I think Jund will definitely make a comeback. They just haven't figured out the right set of cards or right build for it to be effective in the format. The format probably needs to settle down a little bit, be defined, before a Jund deck can be developed that's designed to beat that format.
I miss seeing these Jund decks. They kind of kept the things like, you know, these terrible Amulet of Vigor and crazy ad nauseum combo decks that got ninth place, I think. They kept all these decks in line, and by in line, I mean non-existent. You know, decks that couldn't beat, you know, Thoughtseize into Deathrite Shaman or Thoughtseize into Liliana. So now we're seeing these super inconsistent decks, you know, finishing day one undefeated.
I mean, those decks still can't beat a Thoughtseize, but just because Jund isn't as big doesn't mean other decks can't play Thoughtseize. I know in Affinity, I'm playing two in my sideboard. Just because Jund isn't a thing doesn't mean you're not going to run into Thoughtseize. I think Combo was definitely the deck that kind of popped up a little bit more than we had expected. I know we were seeing a lot of Storm on camera. I don't know if that was just because the people playing Storm were the best players of all time and they just wanted to showcase them.
Yeah, I think there were only eight Storm players at the entire tournament.
Yeah. But one of them did happen to top eight, so...
Yeah,
I like that deck. I like the Pyromancer Ascension deck.
Yeah, it's still a very good deck. It's just drastically different than, you know, Storm was before Goblin Electromancer. Just goes to show how resilient a deck can be through bannings. You know, it's had, you know, what, like 12 cards banned out of it.
Jamie, you were going
to
say something?
There was 12 Storm players, to be accurate.
12? That's, okay.
12, and I think, hold on one second, 9 of them made day 2. It's a pretty good percentage, but
yeah.
Small total number of the field. And most of the Storm players were coming out of, like, the same little team there, too. I think 4 people from Ares' team was on Storm.
And then both John Finkel and Kai Boot as well.
I don't know about the rest of you, but I really need Jund to come back. Because Jund is Tron food. So as long as there's no Jund, and there's all these combo decks, Tron can't beat combo pretty much ever. Makes it a lot harder.
I think it'll come back. It just hasn't figured out the right build yet.
I mean, Jund is the type of deck that needs to know the field in order to make the right card choices and right balance of cards. So, yeah, it really helps once we get, like, the top decks. And the metagame at this Pro Tour, I mean, is not going to be the metagame going forward. People are all going to adjust based on these decks here. So we'll see things change, especially with the GP coming up probably.
Yeah,
I'm actually really excited going into the GP just with the new metagame.
I'm a little discouraged after playing online with Affinity. If blue-white-red control is going to come back with a vengeance, which I can clearly see just because of the Pro Tour, you know, it being the winning deck at the Pro Tour, that's a really tough match for Affinity. It comes down to just needing, you know, you need a Ravager and you need an Etch Champion at the right time, and you need to be able to get them out right away through counterspells. If not, you're just kind of dead game one, unless they stumble, which they didn't happen to do very often. Game two comes down to, you know, having to strip their cards out of their hands, either with a Thoughtseize or, you know, some form of counter magic, either Spell Pierce or Spell Snare, to stop Stony Silence or Pyroclasm, or I guess Anger of the Gods is the new sweeper spell that deck's
running.
Yeah,
how excited are you to see all these main deck Anger of the Gods that were running around?
I'm stoked, running 1/1s and 0/2s when Anger of the Gods is a card. I'm pumped to have to fight through that. So I'm a little scared. I know the last time I really played Modern, blue, white, red was the deck, and I knew if I dodged it all day, I'd be okay. I had to play it once and got to beat it just by my opponent not doing the math right. But still, it's not something I want to play against all day. Same with this Blue Moon deck. I had somebody just Threads of Disloyalty, my Memnite.
I've actually never seen a Threads of Disloyalty cast on a Midnight before. That's extremely interesting.
Actually, yeah. Sounds miserable.
It was. Yeah. It was.
No value.
Because then he could block my Memnites with my own Memnites.
Three mana for your free creature. You're winning in the mana department.
It was bad.
So since I'm the pod player, I'd like to talk a little bit about the changes I saw in the pod decks. I noticed that they're going a lot more combo light these days overall after looking at a bunch of the lists. So it seems like they're just becoming more of a grindy value deck, which is interesting. So the top 8 deck, in fact, actually didn't even have the Archangel package, which is mostly popular online because it takes a lot less clicks. It's something I actually liked when I first saw it, because the Archangel and Spike Feeder combo where you remove the counters to gain life, putting more +1/+1 counters on your Angel, your Spike Feeder to keep the combo going, and all your other creatures. I liked it because it didn't require going through the graveyard, which was a bit of a problem with everyone having Deathrite Shamans. So now that that's gone, I could kind of see maybe getting rid of the Archangel combo because it takes up your 5 drop.
Yeah, that with Jund gone, there's no deck that's really grindier than you are, so you can be the grindy value deck of the format.
Yeah, and nothing's more miserable than a Malira when you're trying to actually kill people with damage.
Yeah, I don't have the list in front of me, but
in this format,
he was only running one Malira, correct?
Yeah, a lot of lists were only running one Malira, and that's what I was kind of meaning by the combo lightness. I saw only one Malira. No Archangel, which is generally the third Malira in a lot of lists, and less sack outlets. So I think only one Viscera Seer. So really, if any one of those cards got removed, you've lost your infinite combo. So it's definitely, I think, going the more grindy route, which is probably good with all like the Zoo decks, etc. in the format. You know, another thing I noticed is the change to the removal package. I didn't see very many Dismembers at all. And in its place, I saw a lot of Slaughter Packs and Path to Exiles. So that's an interesting change in the sideboard. With all the life that you pay in pod, I definitely like this move. Dismember costing 4 life at times, it really, really hurts when your pod sometimes costs 4 life, 1 for the cast, 1 for the activation in the same turn. You've got multiple fetch lands, and you're often shocking yourself as well. So I like the change in the removal package.
Plus, sometimes you'll just be able to get a twin player when, you know, you tap out for something, they flash in their Deceiver Exarch, and then, you know, just try and hook it up with the Splinter Twin, and you, packed it.
Yeah, absolutely. I really, really like the change removal package. The final thing for Pod that I saw was Andrew Kuno, who is also one of the, go-to Pod players. I like to look at his list a lot. Sam Black used to follow his list a lot, too.
He made the original deck list.
Okay, yeah. That's good to know. So he's like the Podfather?
Yeah. he used to call it Project X back in the day.
Wow. So I noticed he was running some Thruns, which is something I ran at the last GP, and I did like having one Thrun in my deck. So, and with the addition of all the blue decks going around, I think this might be a good four drop to keep in mind.
Kunio didn't have Murderous Redcap main, though, did he?
I believe his Murderous Redcap was in the sideboard, possibly. I'll go double-check here.
I just remember one of the lists, I thought it was Kunio's, didn't have any main, which seemed very strange to me. You can obviously win with infinite life, but against another pod player or against a Splinter Twin opponent, it's not a guaranteed win.
Yeah, he had one red cap in the sideboard. When I saw that, I also thought it was really, really interesting, especially since his deck seemed to keep the traditional combo package. He had 2 Viscera Seers, he had 2 Maliras, he had the Archangel of Thune along with the Spike Feeder. His 4 drops in the main were Linvala, which is usually awesome, Ranger of Eos, which is part of the combo, and 1 Thrun. So a little untraditional mix of 4 drops there, that's for sure.
Yeah, it seemed like maybe moving the Thrun to the main instead of the red cap was a bit of a hedge against all the blue-white red decks running around.
Yeah, he ran 2 Thruns, 1 in the side and 1 in the main. I kind of like having 1, you know. I'm not going to fault him because he knows what he's doing. another really weird thing was a creature I've never, ever seen before. Burren Tawn Forge Tender in his sideboard. Yeah. Like, what is this thing?
It's a pretty good sideboard card against all the mono-red decks. It kind of got outclassed by Core Firewalker when that came out around World Wake, though.
You want to read us that card? So
Yeah, I was going to get on it.
I'm looking it up right now.
It's a 1-mana 1/1 with protection from red, and you can sacrifice him to prevent all damage a red source of your choice would deal this turn. So, yeah, it just blocks red dudes or prevents, like, a red burn spell from killing you, something like that.
Tutorable with Ranger of Eos as well?
Yeah, tutorable with Ranger of Eos, which is pretty important. So, I mean, those are some of the weird things I saw with Pod. Who knows? Pod's one of those decks where you can really change it up. I mean, you keep most of the deck the same, but, like, changing two or three cards can make a huge difference when you can tutor everything up.
I wish Affinity had more ways to do that. You know, looking at the Affinity list, that top eight, it's very similar to the list that I've been running for a long time for Affinity. The main note is the Welding Jars in the main deck. I think he went with one Galvanic Blast in the main, another one in the board. And he has the Basic Island. I really like the one Basic Island in Affinity. It's so good against Blood Moon Game 1, you know, having blue mana to be able to cast Thought Cast. You can't always rely on Mox Opals and stuff when they're blowing up, you know, your creatures. It's one of those cards.
Mox Opal and Springleaf Drum would be more reliable than the one of Island.
You would think that, but thanks to Path to Exile, it's not the case. It's actually pretty consistent getting that Island into play and out of your deck.
How many Blood Moon decks are running Path to Exile? That doesn't seem like the best synergy in the world.
I think it's just one of those little things where when the Blood Moon's there, the Island's nice to be able to cast Thought Cast.
Oh, yeah. If you have it, it's obviously fantastic.
And then the Island is also very, very good in the decks that are going to be Path to Exiling you. I'm actually considering putting another basic in there just from the sheer amount of paths that happen. And if Blue-White-Red continues to be one of the decks that's growing, I'm definitely thinking about cutting another Glimmer Void for either a Swamp for sideboard cards like Thoughtseize, or a second Island for sideboard cards like Spell Snare, which is probably what I'm going to be going to sideboard-wise, because it seems the majority of the cards that you need to counter are two drops. You've got Stony Silence, you've got... oh, what else? It used to be Pyroclasm, but now Anger.
Kataki's also a big one out of the more aggressive white decks.
Right, the Hate Bears deck.
As long as, you know, Ancient Grudge, that kind of thing, if they're going for a key piece.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I just pod that thing right into play so you can't counter that crap.
It's also pretty good in the mirror match because it stops Arcbound Ravagers and Cranial Platings in the mirror, as well as Steel Overseers. So I could see that. Oh, and Vault Scourge. I forgot about that. So it seems really crucial in the mirror match. So I may be switching.
Sometimes you just have to counter a Tarmogoyf, you know?
Or a Lightning Helix. I forgot. Lightning Helix is good, too. See, I'm just finding all these reasons to just run four Spell Snares main.
Spell Snare is a very good card. I have three of them main in my Blue-White-Red deck.
I saw a lot of Spell Snaring out of blue decks over the weekend.
I mean, it seems like where Mental Misstep was the go-to best counterspell in Legacy, where it was stopping every relevant spell at one, I feel like Spell Snare is that counterspell for Modern. It's stopping the majority of the things that people are trying to do, just because that seems to be where the format is kind of revolving around. You know, that setup on turn 2.
I wouldn't say the majority. I think it has a good number of targets, but it's nothing like Mental Misstep was in Legacy. I mean, look at my pod deck. There's very few things I'm casting at 2. Like, you pretty much whiff on almost the entire pod deck.
Yeah, the format is pretty bolt and path-centric as far as removal goes.
Yeah.
So it is definitely a big role player, and it's fantastic that it can't counter itself, because that was just miserable in Legacy.
I could see that being a big thing. Jake, for the Modern, what are you running right now? I know we've kind of said what we're running. I'm on Affinity.
Well, right now, I'm really leaning towards that Tarmo Twin deck. It looked like it was something that I'd really enjoy playing. If not, then I'll probably just fall back onto the Fishies. But the Fishies don't look quite as good right now if the Pro Tour actually ends up being the new meta. There's a lot of hate out there, or a lot of things are going to kind of force Fish to the back burners again.
How old is Fish?
Well, you don't want to overcook them.
You don't want to overcook the Fish.
from the Blue-White-Red matchup, I don't mind playing against it. They can have really explosive draws with Vile, but if they don't have the Vile draw, I feel very favored.
That's very true. Vile is very important.
That would have been the time where the John Walls eye roll sound effect would have gone into effect there, Tubes. I can't let that one slide.
At the Invitational qualifier that I played at that was modern, the only way I was able to actually beat the blue-white-red deck is that I was able to get Aether Vial online, and all my mana that I had was actually held back to for Remand or Unified Will, which I love coming out of the sideboard. And they just couldn't really keep up, believe it or not, with the counter spells that I had. I was just Aether Vialing dudes in, and when they tried to play a spell, I just countered it.
So I think the only other person we haven't heard modern-wise on is Brock. Brock, I believe you're on Tron, is that right?
Yeah, I'm on green-red Tron. Like I said earlier, it's a lot better when Jund is the top dog. But the thing I'm actually looking at that I think is going to be good for Tron is the blue-white-red matchup, the control matchup, I don't think is actually horrendous. The blue-white-red is also very good against Twin, and hopefully that blue-white-red control deck will hold the Twin decks down, which Tron can't beat ever, ever. There's pretty much no way for Tron to beat Twin. It's got to be at least 80-20. So the biggest updates to the list have been adding Fire Spouts instead of Pyroclasms. This is in response to Wild Nacatl. It also helps against Fish and things like that, where if Fish gets double lured out, Pyroclasm becomes irrelevant again. And it doesn't cast really so much slower that it becomes a hindrance to the deck. I also ended up moving off of 4 Wormcoils main and ended up going with 4 Oblivion Stones main. And that is also in response to the Twin, because the only way to really beat that deck is game one, is to get an Oblivion or get Tron on early and to get an Oblivion Stone in and leave it on the battlefield and blow it in response to them ever trying to combo. So, boring deck, fun deck, boring deck, not tier one ever, but neither is any deck I play, so.
So speaking of green-red ramp decks, why don't we pivot into Standard this week?
Yeah, pivot sounds.
Hold on, since you're going to cut out that giant silence, that was the best segue in the world.
No, I'm leaving this
really
in.
Dumb.
This is all in. It's still here.
Really
no, no.
It's more fun to leave that stuff in.
Okay, that's embarrassing.
So as Tubes was saying, green-red ramp monsters kind of took over Standard, as we mentioned a little bit about the IQ that some of us played at. I'm looking at the results from the recent Star City event this past weekend in St. Louis. We see the top 8 being completely controlled by monsters. I think control is a really bad choice of words there for me.
There were a couple blue-white decks in there.
Yeah, we see 1, 2, 3, 4... 4 straight green-red monsters. We see a 5th as a Jund monsters. We see 1 blue-white control, 2 blue-white control, and a mono-blue devotion. We see, I think one of the things to note is no black. Other than the Jund list that took 5th, which is basically green-red monsters splashing black, there's no black in this top 8 at all. There's no Esper. There's no mono black. There's no black white. It's just straight creature town.
I believe black deck, even the highest finishing black deck was a black white one in 16th place. And
no, that's not true.
And 11th
at all. There was Jund monsters, which you got Esper black for.
See, I hate these top 8s.
Esper mid range. You can't count Esper mid range. Black. When we're saying black, we're talking mono black, black white.
Took 11th. Mono black took 11th. Yeah. So it was right there.
In the top.
But like we talked about earlier, there's just no way for the black based decks to beat these green red monsters decks. I think Brock brought up the point earlier of Bile Blight being the go to removal, just because the black decks were just so inbred of the format that. Black decks were like, we can run this new card that kills Pack Rat and it kills Night Vale Spectres and Mutavaults. And then green-red kind of popped up and said, well, we're just going to run stuff with 4 toughness and your removal doesn't do, you know, crap anymore. And I definitely saw that at the IQ. Having to use 2 Bile Blights to kill things was just not fun at all. Also, Underworld's
like
bad because you're losing life. You don't want to be losing a lot of life when, like Toop said, they can just kind of burst you down out of nowhere with you know, yeah, either a miscut or hydrant.
Yeah, I think that Gore Clan Rampager plan is less popular. Do we want to segue from standard?
Segue. So, green-red monsters, they're real good. Toops, tell us about them.
They're awesome. I'm trying to tell you red-green monsters are the best, but whatever.
Doomblade die.
Well, but you're not using Doomblade die. You're using other horrible removal spells.
Which I clearly pointed out that was a trap spell, and people are going to put it in and not be happy with it. I called that.
What, Doomblade?
No, the Bile Blight. The trap that everyone was going to change their removal to Bile Blight, and then they're going to realize it was not a good plan.
But it's so good at killing Blood Barons.
It is.
What? It's so good at killing Pack Rat and few other creatures like Nightveil Spectre and Mutavault, but you already had spells that could target those before. So, I really saw Bile Blight as a sideboard card, or maybe just two to replace the two last breaths I was running. And, you can see the effect. There's so many creatures it can't kill. And which has been the problem with the black decks and the black-white decks all along. You have to have a really, really, perfect balance of your removal, because each removal spell can only kill so many targets, except for your really good one, Hero's Downfall, which is why everyone runs four of those beautiful cards.
Toops, I know you're just dying to just vent on monsters, so as the resident control player, go. Just get it out of your system.
Oh, no, I mean, I think the deck's fine. What? It was a very good deck this week.
I'm going to cut him off. I want to hear that again. Say it.
No. I want to hear this on loop, because he's been saying how I need to stop playing green-based decks.
Oh, yeah, I mean, Forest are terrible, but, I mean, the deck was good for this weekend.
Good for every weekend.
I mean, Doomblade is kind of at an all-time low, and Zenigad, comes out of nowhere and can just win you games that you would never otherwise win. We saw in the top 8 of St. Louis that that card put a little bit of work in. But no, I mean, the deck's fine. I wouldn't play it, but if you want to, stand a decent shot of playing a tournament, it's better than... a Chromanticore. It's the highest praise that deck is going to get out of me.
Yeah.
So, what do you think about... I heard a lot of people talking about this for both control decks and kind of mid-rangey decks. What do you think about using Blind Obedience against the green-red monsters?
Oh, I love it. I had it in my sideboard this weekend. I boarded it in two matches, and it was very, very good both times. The opponent that actually beat me with the terrible Miscutter Hydra sequence... commented on how much that messed him up in game 2 and 3. So it was a very good card for me.
So for those who don't know Blind Obedience, it might be a little bit more obscure than some of the more popular stuff we've been mentioning. It's a enchantment back from Gatecrash. It's 1 and a white. It has Extort, which is nice for gaining life and draining your opponent a little bit later in the game. All it does is that creatures and artifacts that your opponents control... they enter the battlefield tapped. So that shuts off things like Miscutter Hydra.
Storm Breath Dragon, Miscutter Hydra.
Things with haste.
Yes.
Fanatic of Xenagos.
Yep.
Xenagod.
If Fanatic of Xenagos is used.
I haven't seen any Fanatic of Xenagoses, but...
I'm just mentioning potential cards that
haste. I will say this. I did use it when it first came out. And then I actually got on the Courser, and the Courser actually is pretty sweet.
Yeah, I know.
Mostly.
The ability to have 4 butt and gain you life and control your top deck with, of course, Dami Raid. Those two were like a perfect couple. And they're great. It's great.
I saw that definitely when I was playing. The player I was sitting down against had Domri, Garrick, Xenagos, the Planeswalker, and a Courser in play. And I was just... looking at the board going, how the hell am I going to beat this? Because you can't. Just can't do it.
Faded Retribution. Anybody?
Yep.
Merciless Eviction.
So just really fast, going back to Blind Obedience, I think it's... I had it in the main deck for one weekend, but moved it back to the sideboard this weekend. And it's a fine card in other matchups, but it really shines in this matchup because it lets you Supreme Verdict away Storm Breath Dragons, which is just a huge problem card. Detention Sphere is your go-to removal spell. But Pro White means that you've got to find that Elspeth or Supreme Verdict for it.
Brock,
I think it just kind of changes the sequencing of the spells. I mean, true, it does slow you down, but I feel that if you sequence your spells correctly, it's not going to affect you as much as you might think it would.
All the blue-white deck needs is that kind of one turn kind of get back on parity. You know, if I had to Supreme Verdict and then you get to Dragon, all of a sudden this lets me, you know, have just another turn to draw and try and find another answer to that Dragon, rather than not having the mana to dissolve it and just losing.
Brock, I know you were going to say something. Yeah. You want to jump in?
Yeah, I just want to make a point on Courser. As great as Courser is for the green deck, you know what? It doesn't bother me as the blue-white player to see a Courser out there. Sure, it gives you sometimes card advantage, but it gives me perfect information the whole time, too. I know exactly what's in your hand, I know exactly what you're drawing, and I know exactly what to hold my counter spells up for. I know exactly when to verdict, when to counter a creature, if I should take damage here or not, and it's just a 2/4. It's not putting you on the biggest clock in the world. So a Courser out on the battlefield for a few turns, especially if you're playing Esper, and you thought see their hand, and then they turn to Courser, you know that what they have in play and in their hand for the remainder of as long as that Courser is out there. And I think that's actually a big disadvantage to that card and advantage to you as the opponent that's not being talked about.
So actually, we've heard a very interesting conversation about this exact point. Kent Ketter, who was in 5th place with the Jund Monsters deck, was adamant on Courser not being a downside at all in these green, red, and Jund type decks, because you're just such a linear deck that you're just going to play your spells. Exactly. It doesn't matter if, you know, there's no fancy tricks that you can do. It's not like you're holding up a counterspell or anything. You draw your card and you play it.
You throw them on the field, you turn guys sideways.
Yeah. So in that way, I don't think Courser is that much of a downside. But Courser isn't there for like the blue-white matchup. So that's why it's not particularly impressive.
For those the white weenie, mono red, and then the other mid range deck, just kind of grounded the game out, help control your hand, make you so you don't have to waste your hand that much, and it draws you cards, theoretically.
Yeah, and especially Thoughtseize decks, you know, if we're talking post board especially, I mean, between Thoughtseize and Lifebane Zombie, you're going to be seeing their hand every, you know, 2 or 3 turns.
Yeah.
So that information loss isn't terrible.
Yeah.
Okay, I think next up, Toops, you want to vent about Modo. I know I've been getting back into Modo. I have my Pauper decks ready to go. I have my Affinity deck ready to go and ready to lose to some games. I've already gotten Stony Silenced once, and it hurts just as much on Modo as it does in paper. They play it, and you just kind of sit there, and you hit F6 a lot.
So, yeah. I just want to preface this by saying that I love Modo. It's the only way for me to play Magic as much as I want to. Our local stores just aren't open enough, and you know, aren't open at 3 o'clock in the morning when I want to wake up and do a draft. So I hate to kind of keep harping on Wizards all the time, but they just keep making these decisions that I don't understand. Late last week, right before the Pro Tour, one of the larger bot chains on Magic the Gathering Online called GoatBots tweeted that he had to pull all his guys down and all his bots down, that he couldn't be making trades. There wasn't really any communication from Wizards about this, and we didn't find out until actually earlier today, 5 days after his bots were pulled from Modo. And that's because Magic Online said that he was putting too much of a stress on their beta client servers. Just one guy. What does that say about Magic Online?
That it's complete crap?
Wasn't me that said it.
It's just me, the programmer in the group. I look at it and I cringe. I'm not even a front-end designer. And I look at it and, I mean, the old one isn't as bad. The beta client is just complete garbage. I know when I was like, I'm going to get back into Modo, I instantly uninstalled the beta and went right back to the old one. If the beta is visually going to stay the way it is, I don't know how long I can deal with it. It's just everything's all over the place, and there's too many things wrong that I can even start. It's just a mess.
Yeah, trading especially isn't even functional on the beta, and GoatBots was one of the few bot chains to have a presence on the beta. I know that they were basically the only person during the Born of the Gods pre-releases that was able to trade effectively. So if you were trying to test for the Pro Tour and you happened to be on the beta, to get cards, you had to go through them. So obviously there's going to be increased loads on Wizard's server. I mean, it's the pre-release. You know, you're going to have the most active users at a single time doing the most trading as they're in a rush to acquire these cards before a big tournament. And the thing that gets me is that Wizards of Customer Service, they just didn't answer this guy's questions. This is his livelihood. It took them 5 days to respond to him. And when they did respond to him, they gave him just a little two-sentence quote of the end-user license agreement that he apparently voided by running his bots. And this is kind of a loophole that has been up forever. I mean, bots have existed on Modo ever since Modo started, just because there's no effective way to trade on there. But Wizards kind of turns a blind eye to all the other bots, you know, Card Nexus and all these other ones. They don't say anything about it until it becomes a problem on their end. Truthfully, my confidence in the beta has never been lower. It blows my mind. I feel like I need a mic drop sound check.
I do. If there was just like the epic mic drop silence that I'm going to leave in, it might be that one. Just.
So yeah, that was my rant, and I truthfully wonder what is going on the Magic Online development team. Between the problems with the large PTQ type of events and this, I don't know.
I know what they're doing. They're probably just playing Commander. they're probably just all playtesting Conspiracy for summer.
That's more likely.
That's what's going on.
Commander was took so much time to get that functional on Magic Online. People were complaining about that
functional,
forever.
You know, in air quotes.
Yeah.
I tried to play one game, and you know, a 4-person Commander game was just absolutely miserable.
Ooh. Speaking of how bad Modo is,
well designed for that. Yeah.
I tried to use Spellskite to stop an Electrolyze from hitting 2 Memnites. And the indication of what it's hitting and where it's going and just the do you want to do this and do you want to do that? I think I paid 4 life and still one of my Memnites died, but I couldn't tell which one was still being targeted or what the Electrolyze was targeting, and now it's targeting Memnite and Spellskite. It just...
You couldn't follow those wonderful giant arrows pointing to things on the screen?
Big giant
transparent ones.
Overlapping transparent arrows that crisscross. And it's bad. But that just might be me.
No. I think the majority of the player base just wishes Magic Online was better. But there's truthfully no alternative.
Yep.
So they have no reason to change it. And it's extremely frustrating for me as a consumer.
So if you guys also hate Modo, let us know. email us your Modo horror stories. If you want us to, I mean, we could read them on air. Maybe if we get some really good Modo stories about how, you know, Modo did this or Modo did that, you know, don't send us ones. Oh, it crashed, because it does that. That's just one of the things it does. It's a feature.
I love a good Modo story, you know, like Todd Anderson, you know, getting locked out of the finals of a PTQ, you know, sucks for him, but it's hilarious that we put up with this kind of thing.
Yeah.
I was watching someone who's on Star City just did a draft. I think it was Sam who, like, in the middle of the draft, it just, like, he lost connection.
Oh, yeah, he missed his first
and when he came back in, his, like, packs were missing.
Yeah.
Like, he couldn't see the cards. It was just auto-drafting, and he just could not see what he drafted. Like, I got mystery picks.
Yeah. And then he got to see, like, 3 Born of the Gods cards. And then it took, you know, a couple minutes for it to load. It's just the strangest program in the world.
And of course there's the times where there's user errors. Those are fun too.
Yeah, nothing much you can do about that though.
Yeah, you're right. I'm an idiot.
I do wish they had a thing when I misclick or I click on the wrong
undo button.
Thing. Yeah, a damn undo button. Like,
don't they have an undo button?
Yeah, but it doesn't work for everything. Like, I was playing a couple days ago. And I tried I went to Voyaging Satyr land, and I accidentally clicked on the land that was untapped, and I couldn't undo it.
Yeah.
Give me a break, dude. Like,
Blood Baron, not Blood Baron, sorry, Desecration Demon is by far the worst one. it asks you in that backwards way,
right.
Would you like to sacrifice a creature?
Right.
And if you click yes, or whichever way, if you click that you would like to sacrifice a creature, but you really don't, you get locked into that screen until you sacrifice a creature. Yep. There's no cancel button.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah. It just, it's, I don't know how hard it would be to implement a cancel button to that, you know?
Yep.
Let's be honest, if they did, it would just probably be a giant blue transparent cancel button that would float over your lands, so when you try to tap them, you can't.
Ooh. One of my favorite is when it starts attaching random things to other things for no reason. Like, lands attached to creatures. Like, what?
And then there's in the cube drafts, or when there's the flashback drafts up at the same time as cube drafts, when you go to add your mana, if you move the box at all, you'll get two different sets of lands. One for whatever the throwback draft is, and one for whatever the cube draft is. Just, why does that appear? Magic Online's programming. Who knows?
Gleemax. He's in the system.
That's Moda. Anybody else have anything more about Moda they want to talk about before I think we're going to wrap this up soon. Anybody have anything else they want to discuss? Speak now or forever hold your peace.
I've ventured enough for one night.
Korean cards are awesome. You should all go try to play Magic in Korea.
High tide. That's it.
that reminds me. I'm gonna look at the top eight real quick. I didn't even look at St. Louis top eight.
You should actually look at the Legacy top eight.
Okay.
Isn't Legacy like 4 out of 5 of ours favorite format?
Yep.
It is.
I mean, there was a Pro Tour.
We didn't talk about Legacy.
So let me run down it real quick. Just
Rug Delver still good. Side note.
Rug Delver's always good.
Okay.
Side note.
Here we go. So we have it was won by Painted Stone. And then I'm just going to go right down the list. We got Rug Delver, Esper Deathblade taking 3rd and 4th, Blue-White Red Delver in 5th, Lands in 6th, Shardless Bug in 7th, and another Blue-White Red Delver deck in 8th, with Death and Taxes, Maverick Jund, and a bunch of random other stuff all coming top 16.
Maverick, that one.
That kind of just jumped off the paper. Maverick.
There's a Goblins on here, too.
It's Black Maverick, so it's adapted.
And a Miracles. These are, like, some old-school decks.
Yeah, I think
we were playing Miracle a year Maverick. Ago. Like, this tournament was played a year ago.
Which is Legacy. It just rotates. It's just a big, giant, cyclical mess.
That's why I like it.
Deathblade's coming back. Deathblade's a real thing. I know back when we were playing back in Baltimore a couple months ago, Deathblade was doing pretty well. Land seems to be the new hotness that people are now just clamoring to play. Or the people who have been playing it are finally winning tournaments with it or doing better with it. Yeah, Painted Stone won it all. I actually got to watch the finals and the semis for that, and Painted Stone versus Delver is just as painful as you would think it is. So I think that is it for us tonight. Does anybody else have anything?
No.
Okay, boring outros are boring. So, let's make it not boring. You can follow us on Twitter, at VictoryCast. That's VictoryCast. VictoryCast. It's really easy. There's Toops' train coming back. There it is.
It's my train.
Oh, there's Jimmy's train?
I don't live near train track.
I thought that was Toops' train.
No, it's
sound effects are my train and my cats.
If you guys want to email us about trains or cats or magic or your moto stories, you can send us emails at coalitionvictorymtg@gmail.com. You can find us all personally on Twitter at a bunch of different stuff. We have a lot of people today, so I'm going to just put all that stuff in the show notes because we're going to have to do spelling, and Brock has like weird letters in his name, and there's a hyphen somewhere in there.
Yeah, so. He does have like 4 last names.
It doesn't fit on the sheets at FNM.
Yeah, I get bro.
He gets bro.
Hey, is bro there? I'm looking for bro. Yeah, that's like, I'm so sick of that.
Yeah, but Brock, if any of us were named bro, I mean, which one do you think it would be out of the 5 of us?
It's very true.
I mean, it would be me.
Yeah, good point.
So,
hey, don't forget to send us some feedback, too, as well. What are we doing good? What are we doing bad? What you want to hear? You know, and trains and cats.
Yeah. Tell us about trains. Tell us about your cats. Send us your cat pictures. Yeah, I might cut
all
that
right,
part.
Well, thanks, everybody, for tuning in this week, and we'll see you next week, then.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Jace is an emo bastard, and that's pretty bad.